You're listening to Civic Media. You can tune into any of our live shows on any radio station across the state with the Civic Media app. Find us in your phone's app store and listen anytime, anywhere.
Live across Wisconsin on Civic Media, you're listening to Mornings with Pat Kreitlow, powered by Up North News. Now, from our Lake Wissota studio, here is the founding editor of Up North News, Pat Kreitlow.
Well, hey there, Wisconsin. Good morning. It is 6:06 on this June 6th. It's a Friday morning. A beautiful morning to have you here up north, live from Lake Wissota, from wherever you're listening, across the Civic Media Radio Network, on the app, YouTube, Facebook, podcast. Thank you for spending part of your mornings right here. And I've got a question for you right off the top. How long are you allowed to enjoy the feeling of Schadenfreude before remembering that it actually changes nothing about the big dumb thing that the two big dummies are fighting about? If you have completely missed this, and I doubt that any of you have, but President Trump and Elon Musk are no longer Oval Office besties. The bromance is over. The insults were flying. It was a real time case to be made of why social media is such a different era than when we used press secretaries and staff and other people that would help you cool off first. So, yes, Cassandra, we're going to talk about the divorce today. And Tony writes on YouTube, it's all a ruse to get liberals to buy Teslas again. No. I mean, for about a hot minute, people thought, wait, Elon Musk wants to blow up Trump's bill and now they're fighting about it. Does this mean? No, it doesn't mean that they aren't anything but what they have always been. A couple of whiny rich people who can't help but, I can't say this quite right on the radio. Let's just say they like to get into petty little fights. And it doesn't help any of us because, again, Elon Musk is still looking for the same big tax handouts. So when he talks about the bill being, you know, bloated and bad for the deficit, it simply means he wants more cuts. But the guy ran his own little hit squad called Doge, and they learned that they can't find enough to cut to pay for all the greed that he and his billionaire buddies want. And so he's unhappy about the bill. But again, we have to look out for the bottom line for the rest of us. This is all, as Congressman Mark Pocan noted, kind of a distraction while they're busy picking your pocket. But we will get into it a little bit more throughout the course of the morning of this MAGA battle royale. Because in one corner, a president threatening to cancel space contracts. In the other corner, the world's richest man accusing the president of heinous crimes and a cover-up. Where's Ron Burgundy when you need it? Actually, I called up the Ron Burgundy slide here. Parker Olson standing by in Madison for us as well. So there's Ron Burgundy with his bottle of Miller High Life going, wow, that escalated quickly. I mean, that really got out of hand.
It did. It was very fast. I did not realize what was happening until all of a sudden it was like, whoosh, gone.
I take a break in the middle of the day here to, take care of stuff around the house, run errands, whatever. And apparently I picked just the right time because there's this other meme where a guy comes into a room or an apartment. He's got a couple of pizzas. You know, he thinks he's delivering pizzas to his buddies and like the apartment is on fire. And that's exactly what it felt like. I'm like, I come back to my computer. I turn it on. I'm like, whoa, whoa, whoa.
What happened
here? He said what?
He said what?
I'm sorry, what? And it was, you know, it was fine for a while. And then you remembered how it changes nothing about a bill that's going to slash services to pay for a massive handout to corporations and the very wealthy. Hey, we got our weekend review panel to talk all about this coming up. Joan Esposito will be here filling in for Mark Jacob. Jennifer Schulze will be here. Former U.S. Attorney Jim Santel as well. Courier Newsroom's Kia Vakil will be joining us a little later this hour. In other news, Dr. Kristen Lierley was in the room when it happened. Assembly Speaker Robin Voss lecturing a group of doctors, telling them they ought to do their research. At least I think she was in the room. She may have just texted it secondhand from somebody else. But Robin Voss telling a group of doctors to do their research. I'm sure it was a question about why he is the one person standing in the way of healthcare for moms who are struggling in that first year after childbirth. Yeah, he's the expert on it. So we're going to ask Dr. Lyerly if there was a proctologist in the room and why he wasn't able to pull that giant bug out of whatever is up Robin Voss's butt. That's coming up in our 8 o'clock hour. We also begin a new weekend sports segment with Mike Clemens from Civic Media, who will preview the weekend in sports, including the Red Hot Brewers returning for the start of a long homestand. We will also have our Scani Summer Text to Win contest. All that and much more on the way. And, of course, you can also text us using the Civic Media app. You just head over there, and you'll need it for the Scani Summer Text to Win contest less than an hour from now. Or, if you're watching us on Facebook or YouTube, put something in the comment section like so many of our friends do, and we'll pass that along. Also, I was very happy to see Dr. Lyerly pass around a social media post last night pointing out that yesterday was the birthday for Robin Tigerton and giving all of us a chance to wish him a happy birthday. And I'm sure we will find out more about what his birthday weekend plans are coming up in just a little bit. But before, Parker, we can even get to the Red Hot Brewers and weekend sports, we got to talk about last night where I did sneak a few looks at the NBA Finals Game 1. And that seemed to be, you know, just another typical blowout in the NBA where Oklahoma City led by, 15 points? Something like that with 10 minutes left in the game. They led the entire game. Well, I'm sorry, not the entire game.
Not the important part of the game.
Until the last 0.3 of a second when Tyrese Halliburton completed the comeback for the Indiana Pacers. And they actually shocked the Oklahoma City Thunder to take a 1-0 lead in the NBA Finals. So, much like the NHL Stanley Cup Finals the night before, Game 1 there as well, you got to stick around for the whole thing. Or, if you're early risers like I am, you wait and you read about it in the morning. You're like, what? Wait, I went to bed and it was completely different.
Yeah.
This is why the Night Owls get their reward. Except, Mr. Olson, across the great state of Minnesota, where I learned yesterday that in Wednesday night's Stanley Cup Finals Game 1, which was in overtime, and all across Minnesota, which is a quite the hockey state, you know, the winning goal in overtime that was scored by the Edmonton Oilers happened at 10:44 p.m.
Okay.
Do you know what happens at 10:44 p.m. every other month in the state of Minnesota?
Do they do like a tornado testing on them?
All of the stations do a test of the emergency alert system.
Oh, that's brutal.
And I don't have a great clip to play here for the audio, but somebody did take it off their TV screen where there's 34 seconds left in overtime. The Edmonton player is literally lifting his stick, and then you get the Everybody in the hockey state of Minnesota missed the game-winning goal.
That's fantastic. Oh, God.
And, you know, you can just hear every hockey fan just going, whoa!
No! Something similar happened with, I believe it was the Indy 500 in Madison last year.
Oh, that's right.
They sent it to commercial, like, as they were starting the final lap by accident.
Yeah, somebody hit a wrong button or something was timed. You know, the timer was supposed to go off, but, you know, they were supposed to disable that in the case of a live event. But nope, up comes the time. You got to play the promo or whatever it was. So here we go. Yeah, TV is fun that way.
Oh, God.
things can go south in a hurry. Trust me from personal experience. Yeah, I do know. So, a reminder that we have our weekend newsletter coming out, ironically called Sunday Mornings with Pat Kreitlow, where I put together some of the best stories of the week in Wisconsin politics. And we have a question of the week as well. We'll have responses to last Sunday's question: should Governor Tony Evers just veto the entire state budget bill if Republicans, now that they've walked away from the negotiating table, if they send him something that, you know, shouldn't be fixed with partial vetoes, or do you just let the governor fix it as best he can with partial vetoes and go from there? There's some other stories that might make the cut. I don't know. I'll decide between now and Sunday morning. I know we had a good discussion yesterday with Chad Holmes about what's happening in the city of Wausau. And an editorial there in the Pilot and Review about maybe it's time to rethink the mayor system and consider a city manager instead. Does that lead to more professional management, or does that take away a little bit of democracy, letting the people choose who's going to lead city government in their hometown? Well, I'm sure have a story in there about the breakdown of budget negotiations. I shouldn't really say breakdown in negotiations. Republicans did what I pretty much assumed they were going to do, is get Governor Evers to acknowledge that, yes, we can have tax cuts, but the Republicans wouldn't acknowledge that, yes, maybe we should help make up 16 years of underfunding our schools. So rather than acknowledge that, they walked away. We talked over the week, I think yesterday, about a bill introduced by Representative Christian Phelps from Eau Claire that would put some caps, or keep the caps, on the voucher school program. Because the way it's designed right now, the caps are supposed to go away next year, and that would lead to unlimited enrollment in the voucher program. So basically, if every wealthy family in the state wants to send their kids to a religious school, taxpayers will have to foot the bill. We also talked about wedding barns with Sheila Everhart and Hans Breitenmoser on Tuesday, and the legislation that is sorely needed by some of these venues in Wisconsin's smaller communities to continue hosting weddings and other special events. So all of that and more could make it into our Sunday morning newsletter. Sign up over at upnorthnewswi.com. Click subscribe up in the top banner. Today happens to be National Donut Day. Spoiler alert for today's history lesson in just over a half hour. But I tell you that because in today's newsletter, there is a story about where to get the best donuts in Wisconsin. And I'm sure everybody has their own thoughts about where they get theirs. Certainly, there are a couple of places that a lot of people think of in the Madison area that made a national list. There's one in the Appleton area that made a national list. And so to learn much more about Donut Day, head over to upnorthnewswi.com and click subscribe, and you will get our daily newsletter from Christina Laurie weekday mornings and our new Saturday sports newsletter, covering some of the positive stories behind Wisconsin sports. Oh, like that Tyrese Halliburton from the Indiana Pacers, being from Oshkosh, and everything else. The Brewers were off yesterday. They are getting set to start a weekend series with the San Diego Padres, and that is part of a long homestand. In fact, let me call that up so I can tell you who all is coming, because maybe you'll get a chance to win tickets or go see the Brewers yourself at some point. So let's see, we got three games with the San Diego Padres. The first game is this evening, and the coverage will begin at 6:35 on several civic media stations. So that's tonight, tomorrow evening, and Sunday afternoon. Then three games against Atlanta, Monday night, Tuesday night, Wednesday afternoon. And then four games against the St. Louis Cardinals, Thursday and Friday evenings, Saturday mid-afternoon, and Sunday early afternoon. Quite a homestand coming up at American Family Field. From the heart of America's up north, live from Lake Wissota, thanks for making this the place to spend part of your mornings. I'm Pat Kreitlow. This is the Civic Media Radio Network.
You're listening to Civic Media. Stay up to date on the latest news and information for your local community and Wisconsin by signing up for our free email newsletter. Visit civicmedia.us/email to get started.
I was telling you about stuff in the newsletter, stuff on the website, stuff on social media, all for Up North News. One that I wanted to mention that I haven't for a while here is our Madison Food Guide. Because Up North News, again, for folks that think, oh, you only cover stuff north of 29. No, we cover America's up north, all of Wisconsin. And we've got a lot of folks in and around the Madison area who read our newsletter, who look up our stuff, who listen through the Civic Media app or on the website or on social media. And so we've done a food guide, which is always well received. And so we just put out our latest one. You put it out. Is it a book? No. It's a section of our website. If you head over to upnorthnewswi.com and click on the tab up top that says local, there will be listed there a Madison food guide, its own section of stories. And I forget how many stories there are now, 7 or 8 maybe, of different restaurants, different themes, different types of ways that you can engage in fine dining in the Madison area. Look, there's fine dining everywhere. We talk about supper clubs. I certainly talk about the great burger joints up here in the Chippewa Valley. But there is also this Madison food guide that I wanted to call your attention to. So head over to our website, upnorthnewswi.com, and learn more about that. Well, where to start with the breakup, the bromance that is no more? The Associated Press story reads like this. Maybe it was always going to end this way, with two billionaires angrily posting about each other on social media, fingers flying across pocket-sized screens as their incandescent feud burned hotter by the minute. But even if the finale was predictable, that didn't make it any less shocking. After long months of Donald Trump and Elon Musk appearing united in their chaotic mission to remake Washington, their relationship imploded this week like a star-going supernova. Or I would contend a SpaceX rocket. It all began with Musk complaining about the centerpiece of Trump's legislative agenda, which the president at first took in stride, but eventually Trump let slip that he was disappointed in his former advisor, prompting Musk to unleash a flood of insults and taunts. He accused Trump of betraying promises to cut federal spending, shared a suggestion that the president should be impeached, claimed without evidence that the government was concealing information about his association with infamous pedophile Jeffrey Epstein. Perhaps most viciously, politically speaking, Musk insisted that Trump wouldn't have won last year's election without his help, to which I wholeheartedly agree. Again, money makes the difference, and Elon Musk put something like $300 million into getting Trump elected. He dragged Trump across the finish line no differently than, you know, the billionaires that did the same to Ron Johnson a couple of years earlier. And I know what you're saying. You say, no, wait, Trump won every swing state. There are 7 well-known swing states, and Trump went 7-0 on there. Yeah, but not by huge margins in any of them. And did $300 million make a difference? As they used to say on Laugh-In back in the day, you bet your sweet bippy. Trump, not one to slouch from a fight, the AP story goes on to say, could hold back no longer. He posted that Musk had been wearing thin and that he'd asked him to leave his administration and that the tech titan had gone crazy. Maybe, Trump threatened, he should save taxpayer money by canceling government contracts and subsidies for Musk's companies. Which led Elon Musk to say, well, I guess I'm just going to decommission my Dragon space rocket, which is what NASA needs right now if they're going to get astronauts down and back from the space station. If Elon Musk actually stopped supplying that rocket, the only other folks who could help NASA with the space station are in Russia. Needless to say, this did not sit well with a lot of folks who loved the Trump and Musk partnership. They felt like kids being caught in a custody battle. Are you on Team Elon? Are you on Team Trump? I mean, one is the president of the United States. One is the world's richest man. One has the nuclear codes. The other now has all of our personal data. Musk put on Twitter at one point, keep this in mind, Trump's only going to be in power for another 3.5 years. I'm going to be around for 40 years, Musk said. I don't know what he knows that we don't know. But then it was ratcheted up a notch by some of Trump's allies saying, maybe it's time to look into whether Elon Musk should be deported. People saying, go back to Africa with all of its ugly connotations. Tesla stock took a dive. Trump's stock took a dive. People were concerned about SpaceX. Republican Congressman Ryan Zinke of Montana said, "It's like India and Pakistan," he said, referring to two nuclear-armed nations that recently skirmished along their border. "It just escalates, and neither one of them seemed to back down and understand the strength of the other." "It was always an odd pairing," reads the AP story, "with contrasting worldviews and deep generational and stylistic differences. Trump is 78 years old. He comes from old-school New York real estate. He never appears in public without a suit and tie unless he's on the golf course. Elon Musk is 53, an immigrant from South Africa who struck it rich in Silicon Valley. He's fashioned himself as a black-clad internet edgelord, and his wealth vastly outstrips Trump's. But they were kindred spirits in other ways, experts at generating attention and enjoy stirring the pot by riling up their opponents. Trump talking about the deep state, Musk warning of the country going bankrupt. So the one thing they certainly did agree on was the need to slash and burn the federal government. For Musk, it was to avoid the government investigations that were being started about his country and it, or his company rather, and its monopolistic practices and other business practices. They agreed that the government needed to be attack what we do, the basic services that we all get, so that they could benefit. So, an oligarchy. But in an oligarchy, there's only room for one strong man. For the moment, it's Trump. But for Elon Musk, this fight is probably far from done. We'll talk more about all of this with Kiev Akil from Career Newsroom. Coming up next, I'm Pat Kreitlow on the Civic Media Radio Network. You're up north. I should have given proper credit to the AP reporter who wrote that story I was reading from last segment, Chris Majerian, formerly of the LA Times and now the White House correspondent for the Associated Press. He's the one that put that together. My favorite meme of the day yesterday, and it's the show title for today's hour, this first hour of the show, is you had one person from South Africa being accused of being here illegally because he overstayed his visa at one point, the other being accused of being with Jeffrey Epstein. And so the episode this hour is Alien versus Predator. But as entertaining as it is, Lori notes on Facebook, part of me, she writes, wonders what kind of setup are they trying to pull now? Is this just a distraction from some other unconstitutional act? Conceivably. I talked to Courier Newsroom's Kiev Akil, and I started by asking if all this circus action changes anything, especially whether Trump and Republicans in Congress will reconsider moving forward with their big bloated boondoggle.
No. Trump very much wants to get this bill signed. It's in the Senate now. There are a handful of different camps in the Senate of lawmakers who want to make changes. There's obviously the Ron Johnsons who want more deficit reduction and don't want to add $2 trillion to the deficit. They want more cuts, that is. Then there's like the Josh Hawleys who, I mean, it might literally just be Josh Hawley, but who's really worried about cuts to Medicaid, although you've heard from a couple other senators like Murkowski and Susan Collins, who also want to protect Medicaid, or they say they do. You have people like Joni Ernst who couldn't care less and think we're all going to die. So what's the point of helping people? And then you've got the like sort of, you know, Rand Paul is never going to vote for it. You've got a few senators who want to make the tax cuts for corporations more generous. And then you've got a whole other slew who want to protect some of the clean energy credits because it's helped bring jobs to their states. So it's an interesting mishmash of different priorities. And there's no like easy path ahead. I still suspect they'll get something done just because, you know, this is the only thing they care about. But it's certainly not a given.
No. And that's the point that I've been making. And again, I'm happy to be wrong on this, but they say they have to pass something. They've proven in the past that they can get all the way to a deadline and not make it. And, mm-hmm. and granted, if they do, that in itself is still a bad thing because the 2017 tax plan bill expires and it would lead to big tax increases. So there's every reason for them not to drop the ball on this, but I'm not going to put money on it. by the same token.
No.
Okay.
No. And yeah, it will be interesting to watch this play out. They want to pass it by like early in about by July 4th, roughly. So, you know, it's going to be a big month of sparring. And I suspect at some point Trump will just threaten to oust any senator who votes against it in their next primary.
Or maybe have them arrested or deported or something.
Or that, you know, yeah.
It would be par for the course. In keeping with things like, well, his new travel ban, which is out, which once again, looking at the list, seems somewhat arbitrary. You know, Afghanistan yeah. is on there, but Egypt is not, where, you know, the there was recently an Egyptian who, you know, took part in a recent terror attack. People in Syria are rejoicing that they're not on the list for some reason. But still, it gives Trump a reason to continue to look like he is excluding the kind of people that, you know, he and the MAGA crowd want to be known for excluding.
Yeah, if you look at the list of countries, it's, you know, almost exclusively African countries, Asian countries, and South and Central American countries. There's no European countries on this list. And, you know, they're all countries with predominant Black, Arab, or Middle Eastern, or, you know, of like Hispanic, Central American, South American heritage. And so, you know, I don't want to always boil it down to, oh, it's, you know, it's xenophobia or racism. But in this case, it's pretty obvious when you look at this list, why it's these countries. And it's also a bunch of countries whose leaders have not bent the knee to Trump. And so, you know, he's just doing what he does, which is just sticking his thumb in the eye of countries that, you know, are largely non-white and who don't have leaders who have leaders who are willing to, you know, criticize him or fight back.
Yeah. And again, it keeps, that's why we're going to move on quickly. It gets us away from talking about basically the heist that he's trying to pull with this yep. tax bill. But in the meantime, the uncertainty that he's causing with this bill, with his trade wars and things, it means that jobless claims were on the rise again with numbers that came out Thursday. So while there was also a report that said the trade deficit had shrunk, and as we discussed yesterday, that's not because American manufacturing and output has come up. It is simply because the store shelves are you know, a little barer than they used to be. Jobless claims, in the meantime, are on the rise.
Yeah, they hit their highest level in 8 months this week, or the week of May 31st. The news came out this week to about 247,000 claims, new applications for unemployment benefits that week, the last week of May. That is a significant increase of 8,000 from the week prior. And, you know, this, let's see what happens in the next couple of weeks, but this suggests that, you know, people are losing their jobs at a slightly higher rate, which is what you would expect as these tariffs have gone into place. You know, over the course of the last couple months, and obviously he just escalated some of his steel tariffs. So, you know, and a lot of companies imported goods before the tariffs went into place. And so now that they're in place, you know, I think we'll start to see imports really fall. We'll start to see some of these companies have to close and shut down because they can't afford them, or pass the cost on to consumers, or lay off workers, or all of the above.
They're not the only ones having to absorb the things that Trump is doing. I think one of the stories that we've been covering most frequently, all of the Courier newsroom outlets, has been the potential for the big bloated boondoggle to have these Medicaid cuts that would yep. be disastrous to families. Again, you see reporting from all of our state outlets. I'm sure every one of them has a different human face that you can put on what happens yep. if these Medicaid cuts go through.
Yeah, I mean, there was the state legislator in Michigan, the state Senate held a hearing on, I want to say it was Wednesday, where they invited, you know, moms, doctors, health officials from across the state to testify about what cuts to Medicaid would mean. And you had several moms show up who are the parents of, you know, kids with disabilities, kids who've survived really severe illnesses, kids whose medical bills would be millions of dollars and unpayable without Medicaid. And the testimony was devastating. I mean, you read the story on our Michigan outlet, and I don't know how anyone would walk away thinking it's okay to make cuts to this program. Now, Republicans are going to say, oh, we're just trying to root out waste and fraud. We're just trying to make sure undocumented immigrants don't use it. but their program essentially creates hurdles for everyone. And if you're a parent to a disabled kid and you are probably having a very, very stressful, difficult day to day sometimes, this situation creates work requirements that require you to work and report working 20 hours every week. That's not unreasonable on the surface. But if you're, and most Medicaid recipients do work, to be clear, a overwhelming percentage work. But this would require you to work, then take care of your kid, then deal with all the things life presents, then report to the government that you've worked on a regular basis. That's a bureaucratic hurdle. It requires you to renew, to prove you're eligible twice a year instead of once a year. That's another hurdle. We have a whole bunch of nonpartisan estimates showing that these two things would cause upwards of 7 million people to lose their insurance from Medicaid. Now, they're never going to say, oh, we're going to take health care away from disabled kids and their families, but that could happen. They also want to make it harder for states to get federal funding for Medicaid that essentially helps provide more care. So it's a giant cut. And if you are a parent, you could lose your coverage. Your kid could lose their coverage. Rural residents could lose their coverage. It is a giant cut to Medicaid, no matter what they try to say.
And it goes beyond Medicaid. We talked for a bit yesterday about how this bill, if passed as is, would include huge cuts to Medicare because of pay-as-you-go rules, as Congressman Mark Pocan told us about yesterday. And it's not just Medicaid, it's not just Medicare, but the Affordable Care Act, the restrictions on access, the closing of, you know, the open enrollment periods and things. Again, all these things are not, it allows them to say, well, we're not cutting things, but again, if they create more paperwork, more hurdles, more obstacles, it's going to take away healthcare from many Americans.
Yeah, we have a record number of people who get coverage through the Affordable Care Act. Some people know it as Obamacare. It covers about 24 million people in this country now. Their plan, the Republican bill, would eliminate about 4 million people, a little over 4 million from the rolls. About a million people would lose subsidies because they are legal immigrants, but they would lose subsidies. The plan would eliminate automatic renewals. So you would have to go through the steps of renewing your plan, even if you keep the same plan. That's going to eliminate about 700,000 people is the estimate. They're shortening enrollment periods, which will eliminate about 600,000 people. They're requiring more paperwork to sign up, which the expectation is that'll eliminate about another 600,000. And then there's a few other things that'll around the edges eliminate some people from the rolls. Like, it's not, they're never going to outright say, hi, we're going to take away 10 million people's healthcare or 4 million people's healthcare, but they're nipping at it around the edges and making it harder for people who tend to work one or two jobs often, because the people on the ACA are people who do not get insurance through their job. And so that means they're probably working in retail. They're probably working in food service. They might be the parent to a disabled kid. They might have a really hectic, busy working class life. And creating all these little hurdles, it's like death by a thousand cuts, and might literally be death for some of these people.
So the reaction to all of these cuts, of course, is coming not just from, you know, regular folks who are going to feel this, but from Democratic leaders as well. We've certainly heard some here in Wisconsin. I noticed that Pennsylvania Governor Josh Shapiro was at a food bank, was asked what he thought of Trump's job so far. He did not exactly hold back.
No, he pretty much said what I think a lot of us think, which is that it's been chaos and incompetence and has done nothing to improve the lives of Americans. You know, the governor of Pennsylvania, Josh Shapiro, he held a press conference on Wednesday in Philly, shout out to my hometown, where he announced a lawsuit against the Trump administration because they essentially pulled out of a program that benefited Pennsylvania farmers. And, you know, those are the people that Trump allegedly cares about the most, you know, farmers, the working class, the people who good old fashioned Americana. But all he's doing is making their lives harder. And, you know, that's what Josh Shapiro pointed out. That's what, you know, you see happening all across this country. There was a story in Virginia where he pardoned a corrupt ex-sheriff who took bribes, just because, you know, he loves to pardon corrupt people who took bribes or were sentenced to things. And his own voters in that county, in Culpeper County, Virginia, were mystified and shocked by this and criticized him for it because they know that this guy was a scumbag. And, you know, that's just what Trump does. He's focused on vengeance and protecting similarly corrupt people and not actually improving people's lives.
Oh, and we haven't even had time yet to get into the clemency that he granted to a drug kingpin who was one of the founders of the Gangster Disciples in the late 1960s. Guy's been behind bars for decades in Supermax, and Trump basically just commutes his sentence because, again, like you said, this is what he does. When you elect a convicted felon, expect the prison doors to be opened and guilty people put out and innocent people put in. Courier Newsroom's Kiev Akil, thank you so much. Appreciate the review. Get out there and have a more restful week before you have to be subjected to all these headlines yet again.
I appreciate it. Thanks, Pat.
All right. Coming up, today's history lesson, as we always do, mornings here across the Civic Media Radio Network, live from Lake Wissota. I'm Pat Kreitlow. You're up north.
You're listening to Civic Media. Find the latest news, information, and archives of all your favorite shows on the Civic Media website, civicmedia.us.
It was the dark of the moon on the 6th of June in a Kenworth pulling logs. Cab over Pete with a reefer on and a Jimmy hauling hogs.
That's right, the dark of the moon on the 6th of June, according to the CW McCall song Convoy from back in 1975 when everybody had their CB radios. Do you remember, was it yesterday or the day before, we were asking young Mr. Olson here about 8-track tapes because he had never heard of them.
Oh, yeah.
CB radios. Did you ever hear about that fad in the 1970s?
I gotta be honest with you, Pat. I don't even think I've heard that term.
CB radios?
Nope, don't think so.
Oh, my gosh. I'll be right back. I got to put some more Metamucil in my coffee over here. Okay, let me see if I can do this. CB, you're familiar with walkie-talkies, right?
Oh, yeah.
Okay, and maybe say police radios back in the day, you know, when they pick up the little microphone.
Yeah.
Well, citizen band radios, there was a part of the radio band that was there just for private use. And it got to be a real fad when they found a way to make these radios available to anybody. And so all kinds of drivers, starting with truckers, had these little radio units.
I do know.
And they would come up with names for themselves and the whole lingo. And the whole song is about all the lingo, the jargon that they use.
Okay. I like it.
Alicia's noting that Semi still had them in the early 2000s, right, before smartphones really, really caught on. Tony says they only work in Canada, CB standing for Canadian Broadcasting. Rimshot, please, everybody. No. Anyway, so that's what CB radios were. And that's the song Convoy.
Canadian Broadcasting, got it.
No. Tony, come on. Let's get back to the history, shall we? The first drive-in theater opened on this day in 1933. In Camden, New Jersey. Tell me you know about the old school technology of a drive-in theater.
I've never been to one, but I know of them, yes.
You've never been to one.
No.
Four Tops, familiar with that at all?
Excuse
you ever notice when I'm talking to younger people on this program, it sounds like the worst first date ever, the conversation as it goes along here? Levi Stubbs, the late, great Levi Stubbs, lead vocalist for the Four Tops, was born this day in 1936.
Oh, man.
Come on, bring me the Four Tops. There we go. Here's what I got to do. I've got the entire box set of Motown records, okay?
Yeah.
Are you familiar with CDs? Not CB radios, but now CDs, compact
CDs.
Discs.
Yeah.
Yes,
yeah.
Okay. All right. I'm going to give you the box set of every Motown single, and I'm just going to have you listen to that front to back for a week.
I don't think I have a CD player, Pat.
I'm going to get you the box set and a CD player. Maybe I'll just have you download the whole thing, okay?
Just, yeah, send me the songs, whatever.
Singer Gary U.S. Bonds is 86 years old today. The Dixie Cups, one of their big hits, a Phil Spector Wall of Sound production, hit number one this day in 1964. I'm not not even going to try to do 1964 with Mr. Parker here. Let's move to the 80s, where Kim Wilde took a Supremes hit and brought it to number one for the second time. The first time was in 1966 with Diana Ross and Friends. Here was Kim Wilde, number one this week in 1987. It's a very 80s version, but I think it still it does still stand the test of time. It keeps you hanging on.
It feels very 80s to me, yeah. Because I know that feel very well.
Yes. All right, I got one more birthday for you. Matthew Schaefer was born in Mount Clemens, Michigan, 51 years ago. Today, you know him better as Uncle Cracker. Don't know how you met me, you don't know why you. I already mentioned that today is National Donut Day. It's also National Yo-Yo Day. Talk about old school. Does anybody play with yo-yos anymore?
I did as a kid, I think. I don't know if I knew how to use it, but I had one.
Okay. It's National Drive-In Movie Day, of course, for the anniversary that we just talked about. And now let me take a moment for two serious notes about the 6th of June. Not from Convoy, but from real life. First, we'll start in 1942. And this marked the United States Navy's victory over the Imperial Japanese Navy in the Battle of Midway. It was a major turning point in the Pacific Theater of World War II. And winning the Battle of Midway on this day in 1942 would have been enough. But then 2 years later came D-Day, the commencement of Operation Overlord, the Allied invasion of Normandy. It was the largest seaborne invasion in history. Nearly 160,000 Allied troops crossed the English Channel, with about 5,000 landing and assault craft and hundreds of support vessels. All told, more than 4,000 men gave their lives before that day was over. These are heroes whose debt we can never repay. We can partially repay it, though, by remembering that time when we were able to save freedom from Nazi oppression. We can repay that debt by rededicating ourselves to never again letting Nazis and fascists weasel their way back into power. Or, if they do find a way to weasel themselves back into power, by standing up against what they want to do at every turn. Because democracy turned out to be more fragile than we ever would have guessed in the aftermath of that great war, when we thought that through everything that had happened on D-Day and everything before and after, that we had secured democracy and freedom and that we would never again take it for granted. And now, sadly, we have all kinds of people who take it for granted and are wielding their newfound powers in ways that frankly would offend everybody who was on the beaches of Normandy that day. We can do better collectively as a country. We must, and it starts with remembering their sacrifice and carrying our step forward from here. A lot to come. Our Week in Review panel, Dr. Kristen Lyerly, Mike Clemens, and more here on this Friday morning live from Lake Wissota on the Civic Media Radio Network.
The national news cycle never stops, but it can be hard to find news about your local community. Civic Media is dedicated to providing quality local and state news coverage across Wisconsin. With the Civic Media app, you can get notifications about local stories that matter to you and your community. Find the free Civic Media app in your phone's app store and choose notifications from the menu to tell us what kind of news you want to hear about.